A lot of people get excited about the prospect of stable coins on Lightning rather than on other chains. I'm also definitely curious to see what will develop there, because there is just a clear need in a lot of places for people to have access to dollars rather than to Bitcoin. Even if you and I would set up a channel among each other and we'd send 10 million transactions in there per month and we wouldn't tell anyone else, nobody would ever know about that. One area of growth that we'll probably start seeing a lot of in the coming years to decade will be just everything related to Bitcoin script, where people are trying to figure out like what's the right kind of covenant that we can implement to then start building all kinds of solutions on top of that. You can earn like 7 or even 10+% per year if you know what you're doing. And there is definitely a market out there to earn Bitcoin on the to earn more sats over the Lightning Network by routing payments. For us, it hasn't been a focus because we're so focused on payment reliability. We want to make sure that we get as close to 100% payment success rate as possible. But then people, like, I've had the question a couple times, like, why don't you charge no fees then if it's not your focus to make money? And it's like, well, actually, there's a really good reason.
Sam Wouters is a Bitcoin research analyst at River and helped write one of the most comprehensive reports on Bitcoin's Lightning Network to date. In our conversation, we explored this report and went back and forth on a lot of topics and stats that I found most interesting. Before we get into today's show, just a quick shout out to our sponsors. Today's show is sponsored by Stackwork. Stackwork is a lightning-powered transcription tool that takes the best of AI and humans to create better, faster, less expensive transcripts. Today's show is also sponsored by CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth was created to get rid of the headaches of health insurance and give you a better solution for your healthcare needs. We'll have more from Stackwork and CrowdHealth later in the show. Sam, welcome back to the show. This is your second time on. You just released an incredible detailed report on the state of the Lightning Network. I've been sharing it with many Lightning skeptics that I know of. I know it's been making the rounds on Twitter, and there's a lot of information in there to cover. I wanted to today break down some of the interesting findings that you mentioned. So I've read through it and found a handful of things that I think might be interesting to discuss. But before we get into the details, why don't we just step back and talk about, you know, the evolution of your understanding of the Lightning Network compared to the last year's report? Is there anything that stuck out just at a high level that either surprised you or that you weren't expecting between last year's report and this year's report?
Yeah, so thanks for having me back on. Awesome to be here. I think some of the stuff that stood out to me is last year I was very much focused on River's perspective on the Lightning Network, and like we just see what we see, so you work with a lot less data. And now, because I got data from a bunch more companies that were just helpful enough to share their data with us for the research, you just start being able to see things outside of your bubble. So outside of sort of River's way of operating on the Lightning Network, and that just provides far more context. You start understanding a little bit more what the differences between different nodes are, how sort of the distribution of the payment sizes on other ones, how often they might see large transactions pass through, how many channels and whatnot they have is like typically it's public data, but it's not like you spend your random afternoon just looking through the top, maybe you do, like looking through the top 50 nodes to see like how many channels do they have and with who, and just trying to piece it all together. And by just getting access to more data, you just get more insights in general. I think that's been a big one. And in total, I managed to gather data on 52% of the capacity of the network. So you really get some solid insights that are somewhat representative of the total network. Of course, what isn't in there are like small, like hobbyist kind of nodes, because they don't add up to a ton of capacity necessarily. But I did, of course, like, you know, ask around in my own network with people like, hey, what does it look like for you? If I look at these kinds of numbers of how much volume are you routing every month, is that ratio somewhat similar to the range that I'm seeing here? So that way I was able to somewhat benchmark it without having to do a massive sort of public data collection exercise. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the things that have stood out to me there in general, it's just really the sense of the scale of the Lightning Network became much clearer to me. this year than last year. Last year, it felt very much like we are, you know, we are a participant. We have a big node, but you don't really have a sense of how big the node is versus everything else that's out there. In a way, it was also like one of the things I think I learned to appreciate more about Lightning is how much unknown traffic there could be on there. Because in the past, I felt a bit like, well, what's the, is the incentive that big in the current phase of Lightning for nodes to be on there, but to be private and to have lots of private channels? I felt like in the beginning, people would probably want to be more public about it and just try to get as much traction going that way as possible. But now, as time is progressing, more businesses are being built on Lightning or like have Lightning nodes and integrations or whatnot. There is probably an increasing amount of private activity on the network, but I obviously don't have data on that. Like they're not willing to share that and just like share it out with the world essentially. So for me, it's like a big question mark of like, I've been able to measure the public growth, but how much more could there be if I was able to include the private side of things? And I'll never have the answer to that. Which I guess I'll just have to find my peace with. But that's been something I've become more aware of than last year when that wasn't as much a thought that I had.
Yeah. And so collecting all this data from some of these public nodes, have you also then, you know, gone back to River and gone like, well, hold on, a bunch of these other nodes are doing things differently than we are. Like now that you're getting a picture of you know, maybe what kind of, what their channels mm-hmm. look like, maybe the kinds of payment volumes that are coming through, are you collecting this all and going, maybe we should kind of rethink certain components of your strategy at River when you're thinking about managing your Lightning node? Like, does that information transfer over? I know you guys have publicized a lot of your information. Are mm-hmm. other companies using that to make different decisions about how they run their nodes as well?
For the last question, I'm not sure. Like, I haven't heard from any companies that have said like, oh, we're going to start taking a look at how we do things. I would imagine the reduction of our capacity would be something that other companies start looking at a bit like, hey, is that something that we want to do, can do, should be doing? So I would imagine that would be the main thing that sort of come out. And I think like that, there will probably be a large set of sort of best practices over time where people start figuring out what are the ways to optimize your Lightning node. And as people learn about that, you know, obviously software will be written that automatically does it for you. But before we get to that point, people really want to know what are those best practices that we should be adopting. So I think that answers that part. For the first part, the answer is actually no. So one of the agreements that I made with all of the companies that were willing to share data with us was that I'm not going to be sharing it internally. So like our Lightning team hasn't been looking at any of that, which like, it's really important to make companies willing to share data, because if they share data with us and then in the next months they start seeing their traffic drop, like the volume that's being routed through them drop, like that's just a reason for them to not want to collaborate anymore, and it would just be an incredibly bad look. Mm-hmm. So far we haven't like I haven't done anything there to try to figure out like also to add on to the question, I haven't done anything to try to figure out what might be their best practices that I can at least share with the team that are not like that are not specifically sharing their data, but just trying to look at like how are they operating based on the logs and the things that we can see and the questions that have been answered. That hasn't been a focus because the focus has been just getting the report itself done. But I am also like, if I look at how we're doing things with the Lightning team at the moment, I feel like, you know, they're super smart guys. They really know what they're doing. They've been improving the infrastructure that we have and the way that we operate so much by themselves already that I'm like, am I going to be able to pull out of the data things that we're not doing well enough yet or that are not on their radar yet? I'm somewhat skeptical I'm going to be smarter than them at this. So like I can take a look at some point, but I'd kind of like change it up and ask them like, are there things where you feel like you just don't really know sort of like not really what you're doing, but you don't really know what are smart steps to take? Like, do you need a benchmark anywhere or anything like that? And that's maybe when I can weigh in with some data points. But yeah, that wasn't the focus of the research necessarily, which like, you know, people just have to believe my word for it, but it's also ultimately my own like reputation and career that's on the line there. And we like the focus has really been like, let's do things right and not use this as a way to take advantage of the situation and try to game the system in a way. Because I did actually get some questions from other companies like, hey, are you guys like planning to use all this stuff? Like, is this just one big operation to become the best node in the network in a way? And yeah, that's fundamentally not the approach. Like, it's like Lightning is so small to be so hyper competitive, where you're trying to game all of the other competitors out of the industry at such a small stage. I'm sure the competition will heat up in the future, but for now, the focus is very much is like, how can we make this thing as big and successful as possible? And that's something that we've got to do all together in the industry. Hence why kind of this report has been so focused on how can we highlight the entire industry rather than just ourselves.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Is there any thought into like ways in which you could work together even closer with some of these companies over time, maybe even sharing, you know, maybe some standardized way of sharing real-time anonymized data or something, just to give everyone in this kind of collection of data a better view into what all the other nodes are doing? Like, I'm just thinking about if there's a next step that can be taken beyond just, you know, everyone handing data to River publishing the report, everyone getting to see it. Can there be deeper collaborations between these nodes? Even though there may be like a little competitive element there over time, at least. What's your sentiment there?
Yeah, I did have some conversations around this. Some of the companies that I reached out to basically asked, like, can we then, if we share data with you, can we then also get all of the data that's been shared with River and our own data? And it's like part of it is that's not the thought behind the research, is to just put everyone's data in some kind of marketplace where everyone who else who participated gets access to it. It becomes a bit of a different beast. So like part of your time also starts having to be split in maintaining all of that and building that out. And it's pretty early stage for that. So like, I think the framing of the question is correct of, could this be a next step to level it up in the future? I also know of some companies that are looking at that. Like, can we figure something out around this for the future where just general data sharing or reporting becomes more standardized and also sharing of best practices and whatnot. So from my perspective, I'm a one person research team. So it's also about resources in a way of how much time do you want to spend on setting that kind of standardization up and being the driving force behind that. I think like that's still an open question. At the same time, like thinking kind of competitively, if you don't move on it and someone else moves on it, then it could also be that they become the sort of the leading data provider on it in the future. So it is a kind of thing that you want to pay attention to in the sense of like, you know, can this help the industry out? But can it also be something that like almost like allows me to keep publishing those reports?
Right.
But either way, like River is interested, like even if someone else sets that up, River is interested in participating in that because we just see the value of putting the data out there and being able to publish for everyone. Like, this is how much growth there has been in the network. This is where there's been activity. This is where like the success rates are lower or bottlenecks are hit. I think the industry could improve tremendously from that kind of collaboration. It's just a bit of a matter of like, how do you want to coordinate it? How do you ensure that everyone gets most out of it? And how do you avoid the politics that quickly get involved in sort of the business side of things? Because it might be that a company today is perfectly fine with sharing their data with other participants who are also doing that. But then maybe all of a sudden their direct competitor, their biggest competitor joins that pool. And then they start going like, yeah, but hold on, I don't want to share my data with them. So you start needing like a permissioning system where you can shut that party off. But then they know like all these other companies have still have access to their data. So can't I get it some way through them? And it just gets messy and political. So that can get a bit tricky, I suppose, where you constantly have to ask permission from everyone else. Like, hey, is it okay if we share your data with this new participant? So
that's a good
point.
It
quickly becomes quite a beast. Like, you can totally see that becoming a full-time job of just trying to coordinate with everyone and keeping the peace.
That's a really good point. Now, let's get into the report itself and start with the high level. The metric on the title of the report was the 1,200% growth of the Lightning Network in the last few years. This is three orders of magnitude. And it's kind of the first You know, I know we can't get exact numbers on payments, but it's this like, it's, you've done about all the research you could do in collecting public data. You've then, you know, said, okay, let's extrapolate that to the rest of the network that we aren't able to get access to. And you've come up with a number that I think is pretty reasonable. And it's quite exciting to see how much that number has grown. You highlighted in that number three key drivers of that payment growth. So this is the, mm-hmm. the number of payments. Gaming, social media, tipping, and streaming as the three key drivers. Can you elaborate on, you know, where those payments are coming from specifically and why people are now deciding to use the Lightning Network?
Yeah, I think maybe to clarify there, like they have been the key drivers that I could identify. So together they make up something like, I think like the low value payments in those categories, they make up something like 27% of the total growth. But that means that 73%, I don't actually know where the growth is coming from. So there's still, and it could be that a portion of that is still related to those types of use cases as well. I just haven't been able to single those out. So for example, I think Thunder Games also published from their perspective, like they have as a company been responsible for roughly 3% of the total growth. So that's like one of those factors where it's like, okay, it's really clear that's coming from them. And I think what's been exciting with them is that they have been attracting a lot of people to use Lightning that previously knew nothing about Bitcoin because they're just excited about playing those games. They earn some sats, they withdraw, learn to withdraw those sats. And that just gets a whole new demographic interested in Bitcoin and Lightning, which is really cool to see. So that's something where you can very clearly identify it. But I could imagine similarly, like Zebedee is also a big player in the Lightning Network. They didn't share data, but I could imagine that they have likely seen similar growth. But that's just a percentage that like I'm not aware of that could be part of that 73% of the unknown transactions to me, or sources rather. So that gives a bit of context there in that like you can imagine if Thunder Games did well, probably Zebedee similar, and then that's already a pretty significant size of the growth there. Mm-hmm. The social media aspect that you mentioned, Nostr, there are a variety of websites and like bots and tools that publish stats on Lightning usage on Nostr on a like a daily or monthly basis or whatever. There's various dashboards for it, and that's been responsible for part of the growth as well. It's I think the biggest one that people expected because Nostr emerged early this year and it's just been growing in activity, and then as a result people kind of expect that to be a big driver in the transaction count. It wasn't as big as I thought initially. I think it worked out to somewhere around like 150,000 transactions per month or so, based on the stats that were available to me anyways, which is like, I'm not saying that's a small amount. It's a really significant amount, but I just somehow, I thought it would be even more.
That's the traffic through Nostr, the payment traffic.
Yeah,
through Nostr.
From what I could tell. Yeah.
Right.
So it works out to somewhere around there. And like, still it's, again, it's a huge amount. I'm not trying to diss it in any way. I think somehow in my head, I had the idea that it would be even more than it is. And I did find that in general, some of the comments from Nostr enthusiasts on social media were like, oh, like a Nostr Zapathon alone does more transactions than this or that. So people get pretty excited about it, I suppose. But that's been, I think, like a very significant driver of growth as people start to realize like everything that's possible there, and so much new stuff is being built. So that's exciting to see. And again, in there, I also don't know how much private traffic is happening there, or can it even be private? I'm not familiar enough with Nostr to be able to judge that. But maybe someone can weigh in on like comments or whatever.
Right.
In that regard.
One kind of related number to some of this payment volume stuff is that you highlighted the average payment size on the Lightning Network. $11.84, I believe, is what was in the report. And my only other data point to compare this with was actually what you guys put in your 2022 version of the report, where you said through the River Lightning nodes, the average payment, I believe then, was about $46 in, you know, in sats. So I'd love to understand your view on whether or not are you seeing payment sizes decreasing? Is this now, because you have access to other data, that we're just seeing a smaller value payment that, you know, River would otherwise still have a large value. What does that mix look like?
Yeah, it's really the last thing you mentioned on like having access to more data, because from our perspective, our average is actually a bit higher than it was last year. But because we have access to more data, and you, for example, Thunder Games that I mentioned, they do a lot of very small payouts. So that, and if there's an increase in gaming activity and there's thus more small payouts, then as a result, that pulls down the average in general. But I say pulls down, but last year I didn't look at what's the network wide average. It could be that it's actually pretty similar to what it is now. But it's just lower than our average, which like our nodes tend to process larger transactions as well. Things like remittances also happen. So there's a good bit of that activity, I guess, which explains that contrast a little bit between the $12-ish and like the 40 plus whatever it was last year. I think you were right on point. So good memory.
So that $12 today, $11.84, that is considering all the data you've collected and the River Lightning node.
And
given that the River Lightning node is actually higher than the $46 now, that River is pulling that number up.
Yes,
right?
Correct. Yeah.
So without River, that number is much lower, and without River and I guess all the other, you know, major nodes that are processing a lot of high value payments.
It's to give some context there. So from all of the companies that I gathered data from, the 52% of the capacity, basically, like, and some of them, like, they didn't share it directly, but they published some stats somewhere, like Ellen Big is one of those, and Async, which like is behind the Phoenix wallet. They also published some stats that allow me to sort of derive from their perspective, like how much volume are you routing every month? And I think like if you look at the spectrum there, there's a bunch of nodes that are doing smaller, like they're sort of routing smaller amounts relative to the capacity that they have, and some of them much bigger. So there's a wide range in there as well. And I think like looking at the different nodes there gives some insight into like indeed, if you would exclude River, it would drop a bit. It wouldn't drop a lot. The average would drop a bit, but not a lot, because the data that I gathered was something like 2.5 to 2.6 million transactions or so across those different data providers. And then I had to exclude the duplicate transactions, because obviously like if River's log says, hey, we sent a transaction over to Wallet of Satoshi, for example, and in Wallet of Satoshi, it says like, well, we got a transaction in from River here. I have to like cancel those out against each other. And that was roughly 20% of that 2.6 million or so. So about 500,000-ish I had to eliminate, because that was just purely overlap between all of the different providers. So about 2.1 ish million or so was left. And of that, River is only about, well, I wouldn't say only, but it's about a seventh. But there were also like, I think in total, there were 8 to 10 or so companies involved there. So that's like a fairly even share in transaction count, actually. It's in the sort of the volume and the value where we have a bit more than average. But like all things considered, over the entire Lightning Network, River is basically processing about, or routing about 5-ish% of the public network. So even if you took that out, it wouldn't be a massive change, but like it's still a noticeable number.
Right. Now, when you think about Lightning moving forward, is that $11.84, that average figure of the payment size across the whole network, do you think that goes up or down?
I would say quite I'm trying to answer that too quickly. I think I could see it go both ways, I suppose. Like, if gaming is the thing that really takes off first or most, then it would definitely go down. If what I touched on in the report a bit, the remittance side of things, if that would start taking off more, then you'd start, like, I think the average global remittance size is somewhere around $200, then you'd see it go up. But those things can also happen simultaneously, or neither of the two can happen. So there's a lot of different potential outcomes there. At the moment, you see more traffic or traction in gaming than in remittances. So I'd weigh more towards it becoming smaller. And then there's still the other factor of the Bitcoin blockchain itself and the Bitcoin price, because the better Bitcoin does, the more transactions get priced out of the Bitcoin blockchain and thus have to move to Lightning, which would then start increasing the average there as well. So lots of, like, in my head, it's already like you're trying to do all the scenario planning of how things could go, and there's a lot of different possibilities there.
Right. And then if we're denominating this in dollars, of course, we have to account for the inflation of the US dollar and the fact that $12 today might not be $12 next year or the year after that. Okay, now let's shift from payment size and let's talk about the actual companies, you know, building on the Lightning Network. And I saw a really interesting section in your report talking about Lightning funding. And you highlighted, you had this really great chart of, you know, the last few years of funding for Lightning companies, and it just spikes up in 2022, almost 10x. I think it was $47 million. I think that went to about 10 different companies in 2021. And then I think it was $428 million that went to about 28 companies in 2022. And so there's almost 10x jump. What is your sense for the right number of dollars to be funding these Lightning companies? Are we, was this like a correction where we all kind of went, we are underfunding these companies. We need to go much higher. And now we're at the correct amount. Or do you think this number continues to go up and up over, you know, the next few years? And, you know, maybe we're still below the appropriate amount of funding for the innovation happening on Lightning?
I think it was a year where a lot of investors started realizing like, okay, the Lightning Network is real and it's going to stick around. And I would expect that part of that is because of everything else that's being talked about to scale Bitcoin is consistently looking at how can we be interoperable with the Lightning Network, because the Lightning Network has some kind of network effect. And we see it stick around in the long term, whether that just becomes a settlement layer between different companies where like Lightning is being used as a backend essentially for remittances and whatnot, and for their just intra-firm settlement. But we then build other things on top of that that just continue to interact with it. That's, I guess, a possibility. That's a possible future outcome. But even if that's the case, Lightning will continue to exist. It will continue to be useful. So I think like at some point, that might be part of the reason investors start realizing it's going to stick around. That's the thing you definitely want to know if you invest in companies in it. And that's like, I think in the first years of Lightning, that was basically a big question a lot of people had, like, okay, there's some adoption here. There's been like the Lightning Torch chain that's been going around and whatnot, and lots of other initiatives that are really cool. But is this fundamentally something that people will want to continue using? So I think that increasingly became clear. As a result, investors felt like now becomes the time to try to pick the winners that we can support to grow this thing out. And of course, a good portion of that funding went to like a selection of companies. I think Lightspark raised a lot, Lightning Labs as well. And trying to recall the third one, I think there was another company that also raised a good bit.
Strike.
Strike, right. Yeah. So those add up a good bit. And of course, like I also had to filter out from that entire exercise, like, which are just like, let's say there's an exchange, they raise $50 million of funding, they integrate with Lightning or something, should that then be counted in the total number? And I did filter all of that out because it, yeah, otherwise you get a very distorted view of what the actual funding is. It needs to somewhat objectively be clear. This company is trying to build stuff for or on Lightning, and they're not just trying to do like the bare minimum integration or something and they just kind of settle there. Because if I include that other type of funding where it's a company that is integrated with Lightning, but not necessarily making that their core objective or goal, then there was another $1.4 billion in funding for those types of companies. I did look at that to get a sense of how much that is, but of course, only a small portion of that would go towards anything Lightning related in the short term. But yeah, it's been a lot of growth, I think, but it became very much a year where people started saying like, all right, the momentum is there. It's clear that this thing has a future. So now is the right moment to start investing. And I would expect it to probably drop this year relative to last year, because that was definitely, I would say, an outlier. From now on, I've also tried to quantify with the report, of course, like how much activity is there on the Lightning Network, because that also helps a lot of these companies to have conversations with potential investors and be like, hey, this is the actual sort of size of the market today. If you don't have that kind of data, it also becomes very difficult to get funding. So I think that's probably also been part of those early years as a struggle. Like, how can you, like, investors just have to believe in the future of Lightning without really seeing any data beyond some of the public metrics, like the number of nodes, channels, and capacity, which we have learned ever since, like, don't really tell you the full story. So this just gives them more sort of ammunition, a tool to have a conversation with, to provide some more insights in what kind of activity is happening.
Do you think that the amount of funding in the last year, that $428 million, is pulling funding away from on-chain Bitcoin companies or even the broader crypto landscape? Or do you think this is just like a net addition to all of the crypto and Bitcoin funding that already existed?
To be honest, I don't have a strong opinion in that regard, but I think that's partially because I did not make an overview of how much funding has there been in Bitcoin in general, which could be interesting to look into. It might have already been, might have been Trammell Venture Partners. They did a report on this.
That's right.
But there wasn't as much of a breakdown between, like, this is how much went to certain types of companies or something like that. So I'm not really sure, sort of like, were there any areas there that were underfunded in a way? Mm-hmm. And I also didn't, like, to be fair, I didn't include a breakdown like that for the report here either. But in general, like I say, like, it pretty heavily weighed towards, like, infrastructure types of companies, because people tend, like, they, like, whenever something's doing well, people tend to like selling shovels, so to speak, like selling the infrastructure to other people to enable them to build stuff on top of it. That's just the nature of our software world. So I find it a bit, like, difficult to say. I'm very much a data guy. Like, is it pulling funding away there? Have there been areas that have been very much neglected? I think in general, like, Bitcoin development can always use funding very well, and especially the individual contributors that are just trying to figure out hard technical problems, but don't necessarily want strings attached with, like, you need to solve this specific problem for us and not share it out there. So I think, like, in general, I don't know if it pulled funding away from that, because it, like, companies tend to attract a specific type of funding, like the funding with the expectation to provide a direct return in many cases. Whereas where in many cases the funding is needed is from people where there isn't necessarily a business model, but we do know that it's important for Bitcoin's future. So I'd say, like, that's kind of where I weigh. Like, I don't think it pulls it away from there. I don't think the money would have gone to those kinds of projects or people otherwise. It's just like in the, I shared a second graph as well where it showed global VC trends, and those were down a good bit in 2022. And then you also typically start seeing that as there become less, like, as there are less investable companies, some of those funds also start kind of branching out and figuring out other new potential growth areas, because we're just not seeing the same kinds of returns or promises in existing industries. So then they dive into new technologies and try to diversify a bit there. And basically they have to reinvent themselves in some ways.
Yeah. So I guess it could be possible that even fintech funding, even, you know, other kind of payment rails that are not related to crypto, Bitcoin, Lightning, the funding there may also be trending towards Lightning, which that kind of information would be interesting to gather. But, you know, I also think about the number of companies building on Lightning. That has exploded. You showed this entire ecosystem map of well over 100 companies building cool stuff on Lightning. Yep. I look at the, like, on-chain Bitcoin ecosystem, and I think most of it can be categorized into, like, wallets and exchanges. And, you know, that's where you're exchanging money and you're storing money. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's a lot more activity and more a diverse set of things that you can do when it comes to payments and when it comes to Lightning. So, you know, part of me then is wondering, like, maybe money starts to just flow to that second layer, just because that first layer is beginning to ossify and is beginning to, it's kind of well understood. And now there's this new kind of Cambrian explosion of ideas that could eventually generate income for investors. So I wonder if over time we'll see more funding on layer two versus layer one. I imagine right now, if I had to guess, layer one funding, that's wallets, exchanges, et cetera, is still probably larger than Lightning funding, maybe not in 2022, but I think every year up until then.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I don't know about 2022 either. I haven't. It's definitely worth looking into some of the data. I don't know off the top of my head. I think it depends a little bit. One area of growth that we'll probably start seeing a lot of in the coming years, the decade, will be just everything related to Bitcoin script, where people are trying to figure out like what's the right kind of covenant that we can implement to then start building all kinds of solutions on top of that. But that will probably take a good number of years to sort of play out and start developing into companies that can then actually do anything that is, you know, that has a long-term sustainable business model. So in that sense, I would imagine that maybe in the coming years, indeed, there might be more funding related to Lightning stuff. But coming back to our earlier discussion, it probably largely depends on price again, because if the Bitcoin price doesn't pick up, then I would say it's likely we won't see, like, basically the on-chain and Lightning will be competing, but at lower sort of volumes that you might have seen last year, just because there is less new money coming in if the industry itself isn't really picking up significantly. I could imagine that, like, basically where there are new areas for growth, where there are new things to develop, rather than let's build the 27th custodian or something, or like another exchange in a country that already has a bunch, those things can be, yeah, could be harder that they get significant amounts of funding. Whereas in Lightning, if we're starting to see like, hey, Lightning can be implemented in lots of different industries and use cases, then companies might get more and more excited about that, because there is a bigger sort of potential market to grow out into. But like, so much of that depends on price, I guess, because if the price booms, then what is everyone interested in? They're interested in buying Bitcoin, in holding it somehow or somewhere, whether that's in self-custody on a hardware wallet or with some kind of custody provider or with some shared custody model. There's like, you start seeing lots of those things. Mining would pick up again too. And as a result, more and more capital would flow towards that, which I think, like, if you look on chain and you basically count mining investments, then it's definitely, like, I would imagine also in 2022, just completely dwarfed Lightning, if I think about it, because that's been a big driver of growth for investments.
I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Just a quick message from our sponsor, Stackwork. Stackwork is a Lightning-powered platform for generating high-quality transcripts of all your audio or video content. They combine AI engines and hundreds of human workers all over the world who are paid over the Lightning Network to assemble these transcripts. And that's what lets Stackwork create better, faster, and less expensive transcripts. To see the results for yourself, you can check out my personal website where I host transcripts for all my podcast episodes. If you want to learn more about Stackwork, visit stackwork.com. That is stakwork.com.
How important is the price of Bitcoin in gauging the number of Lightning payments happening? Like, if you were to, I know we don't have data into this, but as a hypothetical, if we had the Bitcoin price of 2021 in 2022 and 2023, what would that do you think, to the number of payments on Lightning? Because as you mentioned, the price has come down. It has been very boring for the last 2 years. And that's the kind of time frame you're using for this data, where you're saying in the last 2 years, we've seen a 1200% growth in the number of payments. If the price were to, you know, be exciting again and attracting new kind of participants, do you think this is like a, I imagine the number is higher. Is this going to be like a linear relationship, or is this like an exponential relationship? How do you think about what that number could be in a world where the Bitcoin price starts to pick up mainstream attention again?
Yeah, there is actually a bit of data on that. Good news. In the last report that I did on the global payments industry, I put a graph that Bitrefill shared in there with some context on it. So what they shared was, if we look at the payment method that people use on our website, being the, like, sort of the largest e-commerce store that accepts Lightning, I think today, that's how they position it as well. Like, they just keep putting it out there and seeing, like, will anyone challenge this? So far, I haven't really seen it either. But they basically shared, if we look at our data relative to Bitcoin's price and specifically to the fees, because that's sort of what drives Lightning activity in a way, how much of a share of the payments are coming from Bitcoin on-chain, how much is coming from Lightning, and how much is coming from what they call like legacy coins, like, you know, like things that have been around for a long time, like Litecoin, that people might feel like, oh, I can just, like, rather than using Lightning, some people just prefer to switch to some other coin, use that to pay, and the fees on there are still low or cheap. And they never really bother to switch. Like, they've been doing that for a long time and they don't really care about just using Bitcoin specifically. For them, it's just like, I want to get this good or service. I want to pay a low fee for it. I'll just do the thing that I've been doing for a long time. So humans are creatures of habit. But they published a graph on this to show, like, during the 2018, like late 2017, 2018 price spike, like, I think start of 2018 is when Lightning first emerged. So it was a very small percentage. It was just a bit too late to get good insights there. But then gradually until the new fee spike in 2021, you could see that the Lightning share of all the payments started growing to a few percent. And then as the Lightning, like, as that fee spike happened on chain, Lightning actually grew to like 7-8% of the total payments that they were taking in. So still a good bunch of it was just on chain Bitcoin. But then during those periods, there was also growth initially in those legacy payments being used, rather than, you would think everything then goes to Lightning, but a lot of people just switched to what they were using in the past, which was like just like Litecoin or whatever. And from then on, you could see that Lightning did, like, it wasn't just a temporary spike. It remained sort of the size that it's what that it was at, and it continued to grow gradually over time. Now, I would be curious, they haven't, like, I think the data was shared around March this year, so just before a lot of the fee spikes that Ordinals briefly caused. So I would be interested in seeing, like, how did it look after that point in time? But in general, the trend was pretty clear. Gradually, people start using Lightning more over time as they become more educated about it. So I would imagine that if the price picks up a lot again, you will see that continue to grow. So far the growth has been pretty linear, but it kind of depends with, like, in general with fee spikes, if they're, you know, if it's sustained for a good period of time, then you'd start seeing Lightning pick up a lot faster. If it's only for a brief period of time, then the sort of the uptick and the continued usage of it would probably only gradually increase. So it depends a little bit on how things work out.
Now, the assumption also there be that, would be...
Sorry to add on to that. It could also be that if the price drops back down, but the fees remain sort of significant, then it could be that you just see sustained growth there and that people continue to use it. Because I don't have a good picture of, like, what's the price of the average good or service on Bitrefill. But, you know, if the fee is just too large of a share of what is being bought on there, then you would likely see almost all of it shift over or shift away from Bitcoin on-chain and towards Lightning and other options that they provide.
Right. That's the point I was going to make there about the relationship between fees and price. The assumption is that those two kind of track each other pretty closely, but I think the Ordinals example earlier this year is a bit of a divergence there, where we did see fees spike dramatically. Price did not do a whole lot. I guess if those two diverge into the future, if we see high prices without huge fee spikes or the reverse, it adds a couple extra variables into this data.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see. But I also think it at high prices, I start to wonder if people will be hesitant to spend sats because they're in, you know, this saving mode, this like, oh, my money's becoming more valuable. I actually don't want to use it on Nostr anymore. I don't want to zap people. Yeah. I'd rather keep it for myself and see if I can, you know, build up a little nest egg. But then the reverse of that is that I think a lot of apps today on Lightning are apps that let people earn, and they actually don't require spending of sats. It's like dollars are flowing in through various means and then are being distributed to the users of those apps. So I don't know. There's a lot to consider there.
Yeah, I think if the price would increase significantly, then you'd still probably see more, like, you'd see more people flow in, and ultimately it would be net growth. But, like, you'd see some people who indeed would decide, like, okay, I'm just going to hold on here for a bit to see how high it potentially goes. at the same time, you also have the people who are like, oh, the price is up, like quickly I'll spend some before it crashes back down, and like now I can get more for my money. So you'll get a pretty big mess of things, but overall I think it would increase.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. All right, let's go to another section of the report on River's routing earnings. I thought this was really interesting. In the report, it showed about, it looked like 3.4 or so Bitcoin that you guys have earned to date. I think that was as of August 2023. So by now, it could be 3.6, 3.7 or something. You are probably now over $100,000 of routing earnings from your Lightning node, which is really cool. That's I think it's a meaningful, you know, number that now people can grab onto and go, this is an actual, like, it's an actual business. You know, you can, I know for River, in the scope of River's business, it may not be the biggest revenue percentage, but I think $100,000 over the course of a couple of years, most of which probably came in the last 12 months, is pretty significant. Is that number higher or lower than you anticipated? Are you kind of impressed by that 100,000, or did you think that this could have been 200,000 or 300,000 if a few different things had gone differently?
Well, it could have definitely been higher, in the sense that if it was more of a focus for the company, then if we made it a focus, then there could be a good bit more earnings there. I think I calculated to be somewhere around like a 1% yield over a yearly basis at the moment, based on the rate that it's going. But there have been people who have like also proven that, you know, you can earn like 7 or even 10+% per year if you know what you're doing. And there is definitely a market out there to earn Bitcoin on the to earn more sats over the Lightning Network by routing payments. But you're going to have to be good at it. Like it's going to be a small number of people who really like deeply understand how to do that professionally. So for like most people who typically ask the question of like, can I earn good returns there? They kind of want a passive type of solution where they just park their money somewhere, the thing automatically works and then just returns money to them. I think the moment like anything remotely like that happens, where you can just do it with zero involvement in any way, you'll likely see the capacity increase a good bit, because who doesn't want to earn some sats without really having to do a lot. But the focus just hasn't been there for us. And I was actually hesitant initially to put it in, because I was like, well, if it's not our focus, like what's the point of sharing the stats? But then I realized actually a lot of people want to know this. They want to know like what are the potential earnings on there. And they're certainly higher than what we've published, like potentially, like you could do a lot better there. But for us, it hasn't been a focus because we're so focused on payment reliability. We want to make sure that we get as close to 100% payment success rate as possible. But then people, like, I've had the question a couple times, like, why don't you charge no fees then if it's not your focus to make money? And it's like, well, actually, there's a really good reason. If you don't charge any fees, then a lot more people and individuals and companies will want to route through you and just constantly do that. And it pushes your liquidity all over the place. And that makes it a lot harder to provide a reliable solution to people. And it could also cause people, like if they connect with us, they could start messing with our business, basically, where they're just for the fun of it, messing with our liquidity, and then payments start failing. And that's just not a good way to set yourself up as a company. And this kind of links to sort of the big responsibility that we have with, like, with River Lightning, we're servicing Chivo Wallet. And people sometimes ask, like, oh, like, what's that like to to provide a service for a company like that? And it's a really big responsibility, because if we mess it up, then and it would cause them to not want to use the Lightning Network anymore in some kind of way, then that would be really negative press for the entire Lightning and Bitcoin industry. So it's a really big responsibility to do that right. And thus, like, our team has to take it super seriously and think very carefully about how we set things up. And if their focus would become like, let's try to maximize fees here and make as much as possible, then you just start creating a different kind of node, like a different kind of reliability of the system, because you are optimizing for something different. And that's just not where the focus is.
So it's a bit counterintuitive then, because you have to charge some fee to avoid your liquidity from being sent all over the network in places you don't want it. But at the same time, your goal is not to maximize profit. Your goal is to maximize payment reliability. And so just kind of like a happy accident that you get to earn this 1%. And so is this 1%, this is the routing earnings divided by your public, your side of all your channels, the capacity, total public capacity?
No, it's based on us. Yeah.
Okay.
So what we have on the nodes, and that gives a certain return.
Okay. And
for me, that was actually like, for context, it's been like not the fee part of it, but how much volume are you routing through it, which ultimately generates those fees. That was for me actually the key to start figuring out like how many transactions are happening on Lightning, because I could basically see that on average, for every one Bitcoin a node had in capacity, they were routing about 0.59 Bitcoin per month. That's the average, of course. And like we mentioned earlier, River pools that up significantly, but because for us, I think in August, it was about 200%. And now since we've reduced our capacity, we're still routing the same or more transactions and same with the volume, that percentage is even higher. So there was basically a range between like 15 and 200%-ish or so, with the average being, weighted average being 59%, where I could start seeing like, hey, If this is about how much volume nodes are processing based on their capacity on average, if you extrapolate that to the whole network and you have an idea of what the average payment size is, then you know, if this is the entire amount the public network is routing, this is the average payment size, then you know about how many transactions are happening. Mm. So that's sort of the key to figuring out like what's that kind of order of magnitude that we're in, what's the kind of lower bound of the range, excluding those. Kind of going back all the way to your first question of like what surprised you, it's like how much direct traffic there is between nodes that wasn't always shared with me, obviously. And like, even if you and I would set up a channel among each other and we'd send 10 million transactions in that per month and we wouldn't tell anyone else, nobody would ever know about that. So
right.
I can't figure that kind of stuff out either. So it's possible that there is like the 1200 plus percent growth that we saw in the past 2 years. It's possible that it's just way higher, but there is no way to calculate some kind of upper bound of what that could potentially be, as you know, there's just direct and private traffic on the network.
I see. So River is routing 2 to 3 times the amount of public capacity that it has on its side of its channels every month. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, you mentioned that by reducing your total capacity on Lightning, you took that number from like 200% to 300%. Are there any other things that you are working on doing or you think that might lead to increased usage of those funds? Because that's like that's payment efficiency there, right? Like you have this one Bitcoin, and if the more number of times you can use that in a given month, the more payment volume in theory you can support. What are some steps you guys can take or other participants on the Lightning network can take to really make every Bitcoin route more volume per month?
Yeah. For which the term is like, it's like about the velocity, basically, like how many times is it changing hands? And today Lightning is already doing that better than on-chain Bitcoin, because something like 70% of the supply on Bitcoin hasn't moved in a year. And then the 30% remaining, like it has, I believe it has changed hands about 5 times per year. Whereas on Lightning, the capacity like that's been moving on there, it's something like 7 times per year or so. Like, so that's already a little bit higher. But to your specific question, I think it would be a good question for a Lightning team specifically. Like, are you guys technically doing anything to get more out of it? At the same time, the other side of it is with River Lightning, we are, you know, constantly talking to businesses to see if they want to integrate with the Lightning network. They would make use of our API, and that would, as a result, sort of reuse that same capacity more times than it is doing today. So I think that's part of growing the adoption there. It's just speaking to companies, and specifically increasingly non-Bitcoin companies as well, because, you know, getting Bitcoin companies involved in Lightning is important and really useful. But a way to grow the overall industry is also looking into what are companies that might benefit from using the Lightning network, even if their users don't necessarily need to know that's happening behind the scenes. And a good case of that is remittances, where you could have an exchange in one country, an exchange in another country, and then the user in the US, for example, says, I want to send $200 over to India. And they might do that through their exchange where they don't even know about Bitcoin. They don't know anything about the Lightning Network, but they just tell their exchange, I want you to send this amount of money to that user in the other country. And then the exchange will just send over the Bitcoin over the Lightning Network instantly to the exchange on the other side of the world in India, for example, and then convert it there locally to the other user in Indian rupees. And neither of those users need to understand what the Lightning Network is, what a Lightning wallet is, what like non-custodial custodial is, like whether they should manage their liquidity and whatnot. So that's where Lightning starts to sort of outgrow the need for users to understand it. And there are potentially more use cases like that where we can use the Lightning Network to facilitate things in the real world that don't require the user to be involved at all times. And there will be both. There will be things where people definitely know they're using Lightning. They're really excited about it. And there will be things we just build on top of it that where people just don't realize it's happening. And,
yeah.
There's tremendous room for growth in that. And I think like really important for the industry to look at, like rather than trying to rebuild entire industries in a Lightning native way, can we just figure out what existing companies might benefit from this in some ways? And I think there's a lot of room for experimentation and figuring things out. And it kind of takes people who have experience in those industries to really get Lightning and then start thinking about like, hey, maybe we can implement this internally in some ways.
Yeah. One other piece you mentioned in the report was inter-exchange transactions. And yep. So this, I believe, is Bitcoin and crypto exchanges, the fees they've incurred in sending money, not users withdrawing and depositing, but between each other. And yep. I think you highlighted that it was wildly different in 2021 and 2022 because of the fee market. But I think it was between $1.5 million and $15 million in fee expenses just from those inter-exchange transfers. Do you think that this is a reason why Binance and soon Coinbase have these Lightning Network integrations now? Is this like a business case for them to say, okay, we spent $10 million in fees last year, let's integrate Lightning and save ourselves five of them?
I think it's going to be part of it, but also obviously if they build the infrastructure themselves, or like invest significant resources into it, then that is also a cost for them, which like potentially they could spend those resources on trying out something else, like trying to build some other product that might get them more users or more revenue. So I think part of it is just that it's trying to cut some costs. And we have a section on this in the report as well, where it's a little bit like what, like all these companies that are talking to us about potentially using the Lightning Network, like why are they interested in it? And cost saving is one. But sort of for a lot of exchanges, especially, it becomes about risk management. It's like integrating Lightning for them, for an exchange, is like an insurance policy. Because if you look at their business model, it's very dependent on usually a relatively small number of days in a year. Like I think based on an article from Cointelegraph, it was something like most of the revenues are made in 10 days per year of like when most of the price action is happening. So for them, they have to be prepared for those moments. If you cannot service your users during those days because they can't even deposit to your exchange or they can't withdraw from it, they're going to get annoyed. They're going to like cover you in support tickets and they're not going to recommend you to their friends and family and other relations. So for them, they need to be ready for that point in time and have Lightning withdrawals and deposits available. So it's not just for their own sort of internal kitchen of let's like try to spend less on fees. It's also to make sure they can continue to serve their users when those users are sort of ready and excited to buy and sell and deposit and trade.
That's a great
and whatnot.
Point.
So they
yeah,
really
that's
like
a really good point.
They need to be ready for this. They can't risk it. It's crazy.
Yeah. And now that some exchanges have Lightning integrations and some don't, it really puts the ones that don't at a disadvantage. Like when you get one of those 10 days every year where Bitcoin spikes up 15% or whatever it is, those exchanges that have Lightning integrations may see that they're attracting a lot of the liquidity and a lot of the exchange activity just because of that speed where you can instantly get exposure to the price of Bitcoin.
Yep.
Versus one that takes an hour.
Yeah, and then what you typically see is that like they realize it when it's a bit too late, when the fees are spiking and they're like, damn, like like we're seeing huge churn here. Like people are just dropping off and like might be going to competitors. And then they suddenly start realizing we need to integrate Lightning now, but then it's too late because they're so focused on even keeping the platform online. So It's kind of crazy if you think about it. You like as an exchange, you could survive like 2 years of bear market. And then the moment's finally there where it's going to all be worth it. And then you're just struggling to stay online. And even if you manage to stay online, your users can't even deposit or withdraw. So yeah, at some point, all exchanges simply have to do this. They need some kind of alternative there to be able to serve their users. And this is going to increasingly likely become the case for any kind of company that allows users to withdraw and deposit Bitcoin, because yeah, at some point, fees might potentially just be too high and your whole business model could break. So, and I mean, now, we've seen that happen in the past where some use cases just got priced out of the chain and as a result dropped off. And I think one of the things the report has highlighted as well is Lightning enables those things to come back, because the vast majority of payments on Lightning are just under that threshold of what you'd ever want to spend or send over the blockchain itself.
Health insurance sucks. It's confusing, expensive, and frustrating, but there's a better way. CrowdHealth was created to get rid of the headaches of health insurance. You get access to a community of people who are willing to help out in the event of an emergency, as well as telemedicine visits and more without doctors' networks getting in the way. Let CrowdHealth help with your healthcare needs. You can get started today for just $99 per month for the first 3 months if you use code Kevin to get the healthcare you deserve. Again, CrowdHealth is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com. Code Kevin.
And River started out with a Lightning integration, but from what I've gathered from talking with other exchanges, this is like a multi-month process to really get their exchange integrated with Lightning. I guess it depends on the implementation and the details of it, but I've spoken with a few exchanges and it seems like that's a recurring trend, that somewhere between 3 to 6 months is kind of the, you know, time allotment that is required for an exchange to really get a battle-tested Lightning implementation ready to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're right. As you say, this may be, you kind of have to get ahead of it. It may be now that if you're starting today, you may miss some of these 10% days where Bitcoin really picks up and there's a lot of activity. But, you know, the best time to start was 5 years ago. The second best time is today. So hopefully we see some more exchanges picking up Lightning integrations. And hopefully we see this number that you mentioned in fees, you know, go down. That exchanges are not spending $15 million a year just to send money back and forth between each other.
Yeah, but you then get into an interesting discussion where people are like, yeah, but what about the miners? Because like miners are already having a tough time and it takes away fee revenue from them. But like ultimately, if they're more eager to send those inter-exchange transfers over Lightning instantly, then it also means there probably already is a healthy fee market. So even if you draw those funds away from on-chain, because most exchanges, like, they're not going to bother, they don't care. Like during bull markets as well, they'll happily just pay like $10,000 in some fee of like a whole bunch of batch transactions, because they're just raking in lots of money in those moments and not really thinking about it too much. So for them, it's like they're only going to move over Lightning if it actually makes a lot of sense for them, if they get priced out of doing that on chain. So in that regard, it's already like a non-issue for miners, basically. And you'd also just see, like, ultimately, what do we want is that more people are able to self-custody their Bitcoin. So the less activity we have on chain that sort of takes up space from those kinds of people, the more it remains affordable for people to self-custody. So ultimately, that should be some kind of approach that the industry takes, where we try to think carefully about, like, if there are ways to move traffic to other layers where, you know, there aren't really drawbacks, then we should probably see if we can do that.
Why don't miners start spinning up big routing nodes and kind of copy the River playbook there, and kind of, rather than aiming for payment reliability like you guys are, why don't they kind of extend what you guys have done and really try and ramp up the fees to get to maximize profits, so that if a lot of payment activity does flow over to Lightning, they are now still earning from that. They have a bunch of many of these miners have a bunch of Bitcoin that is just sitting there waiting to be deployed. Why aren't they deploying it on Lightning? Yeah.
I don't think that would be the smartest move for them, because if Lightning picks up significantly, on-chain would also pick up significantly. Like that will always go hand in hand, I think. Like, otherwise, like, why would you be transacting over Lightning if on-chain is like cheap enough to do it? That's just going to be easier. So I think the main reason would be they would have to diversify what they're focusing on. And for a lot of miners, it's about survival, about being efficient, about being focused on the challenges in their specific industry. And it's like you said, if it takes an exchange a bunch of time to set up their own Lightning infrastructure, which like it depends on how much they do themselves, because if they do it through like some kind of existing solution, like an API, like already mentioned River Lightning, but that saves a good portion of the time. But the miners would have a similar challenge. It's not because an exchange has such like as far more infrastructure, far more complexity. That's not the only factor that takes up a bunch of time there. It's also just figuring out like what are all of the things we need to be considering here, because it's a completely new domain. So you would need to put a team of people on there, and I'm pretty sure some mining pools have investigated this, but I suspect that for them it probably makes more sense to use that capital in ways that they're already familiar with, rather than trying to figure out new niches that are a bit unknown and just having a dedicated resource on there who's trying to figure it out, to then potentially conclude at the end like, even if we want to do this, I can't do this by myself. We need a team of people. And it's like you said, if you put a couple hundred Bitcoin to work and you're, even if your return is a few percent, is that going to pay for that team of people on a yearly basis? So once you start doing the math there and figuring out all of the challenges that come with it, then it's probably kind of a big overhead cost and a big challenge for them to successfully pull off. So maybe you'll see it if Lightning continues to grow. And if, as I would expect, I don't expect that fees would be near zero on Lightning in time. I think there will probably be a reasonably competitive fee market,
right?
Just for it to work reliably. So, maybe it's possible some of them are working on it as we speak, and I'll be totally wrong, but I just can't imagine it being the wisest choice for them.
Yeah, I guess where I'm coming from is I'm trying to figure out if the relationship between fees generated from on-chain payments and fees generated from Lightning payments will always kind of be roughly consistent, or is there a world in which 90% of all fees generated by Bitcoin transactions is accruing to the routing nodes on the Lightning network? Is that
I see your point. I think it's a good question. It's something I haven't really like looked into, like how could that develop? Like, could that become so much bigger? Because you could imagine if, you know, the more the Lightning network gets used, the more revenue is happening on there. Like the network itself will be bigger. There will be more channels. So channels will need to be opened and closed. You'll see a good bunch of that, like resizing of channels, all of the liquidity management and whatnot. So I could imagine that just adding up to a lot of fees. So I don't know what the like long-term, what the relation there would be. I think.
But the channel open and close fees would be still accruing to miners on chain.
Yeah, miners. Yeah. Okay. But I think like some of the challenge there then is like, there's a maximum that, or rather there's a minimum in fees that Lightning nodes would want to charge to be able to pay for what is happening on chain. So it's always kind of downstream of that. And they would want a premium based on top of that. So I guess that's kind of where the math works out. You can't go much above the premium, because the higher you go above the premium, the more people just go through other routes. So in a way, it's probably a fairly like correlated relation, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah, there's a number of variables. I may have to sit down and try and parse this out. But
it's fun to do when you have a bit of time.
It's really interesting to think about. Okay, I want to ask a couple more questions related to the report. You had one section on technological improvements to Lightning. You highlighted a number of things that teams are working on. Just high level, is there anything specific that you think could help Lightning adoption? Any technological improvement that you'd like to see to either wallets or apps, exchanges, anything that could really unlock more Lightning activity?
Yeah, I think in the report itself, I kept it generally somewhat vague. Like, it wasn't the focus to make sort of the definitive list of, I think these are the upgrades that we need to get us there. Also because, you know, that list will very quickly go out of date the moment you kind of write it in there. It's much more in general about, like, what are things that we can do to lower the sort of technical threshold to interact with Lightning? What are things that make it more user-friendly? Like, splicing always comes up there as the number one thing that excites a lot of people. Just having that one unified balance for people, and they don't need to think anymore about, like, should I be sending a Bitcoin payment or a Lightning payment here? It's just done for them automatically over whatever is the cheapest and most effective at the time. So I think all of those types of things will be super helpful. A lot of people get excited about the prospect of stable coins on Lightning rather than on other chains. I'm also definitely curious to see what will develop there, because there is just a clear need in a lot of places for people to have access to dollars rather than to Bitcoin. I'm curious to see how those types of things will develop. I definitely hope to see some kind of stable coin on Bitcoin that actually gets, like, reasonable traction, just to see, like, is that something that people would actually want to use? Can the infrastructure that's built on top of that, can the wallets, etc., can they be simple enough that people really get what's happening here, that they understand the value proposition, that they want to use it? I'm happy to see those kinds of things develop that just make it more accessible to people, as it's just, like, even Bitcoin itself is already so complicated, and then people also have to understand Lightning, and then you get the whole custodial versus non-custodial debate, and you just lose so much of the world population that will never bother with those things. So anything that just makes it more accessible for them, I'm very eager to look into and watch.
That's fair. All right, let's jump into the Lightning round. I got a few rapid fire questions for you. The first one is based on the number of users on Lightning Network. You highlighted in this report you had a wide range, but the range was somewhere between, I think, 279,000 to about 1.1 million Lightning users. How many Lightning users will there be a year from now?
Oh, God. That's a great question. Well, my main question is, will I be able to do a better job at estimating the range by then? Because that's been really difficult.
I guess a sub-question to this would be, in that range of 279,000 to 1.1 million, what is your gut telling you about where that number actually is? And then I guess maybe that'll help inform a guess for next year.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, like, I don't think it's over a million. It feels too high. It's, like, theoretically it's a possibility, but I don't think it's there. It depends. Like, big black box there is Cash App. Like, how much Lightning usage do they have? Because they have the vast majority of Lightning installs. Actually, this is, like, a rapid fire question round, so I need to be faster here. I think, like probably, like, 500 to 600,000 or so users would be my guess, and then maybe next year. I wouldn't guess it a huge amount higher. It really depends on what fees. Like, maybe, like, 800,000, 900,000 at best.
Yeah, that's fair. I've got to stop asking so many difficult questions in the rapid
fire. Oh, no, it's fine. I'm just going off.
What about non-Bitcoin businesses using Lightning? You highlighted Cash App as kind of, they're Bitcoin adjacent as a Lightning integrated product. If you could pick one non-Bitcoin business that you think it would be useful for them to integrate Lightning, who's your pick?
Oof. I'd say probably Twitter, just because of how that's gone on Noster, just to see, like, what does that work like at a global scale. It just feels too easy, and then likely other social media platforms would follow.
Yeah, that's fair. And then finally, who's one builder in the Bitcoin or Lightning ecosystem you'd like to give a shout out to for doing great work?
Oh, there are so many. Like, that's been the whole thing with the report. Like, I think I was actually reading a kind of a technical proposal today from the CTO of Async, Bastien, and just, like, a random shout out to him, because I think, like, he's really trying to drive Lightning forward as well. I listened to some of his episodes recently as well. So just a random shout out to him. He's the first person that came to mind who's just really trying to think about how can we do non-custodial Lightning the right way. And I think that's a really noble vision, really cool thing that they're doing. So yeah. Shout out to him.
Yeah, he's great. I had him on the show a while ago. I hope to get him on again soon. Before you go, where can folks go to learn more about you and read the River Report?
You can find me on Twitter at SDWouters. You can find it there as well. I've got it pinned at the top, or you can go to blog.river.com and it's listed on there at the top as well. So yeah, very happy to chat about the report and just Lightning in general. It's always fun to get into. I really enjoyed doing this.
Yeah.
And now I've got to wait until I get to do it again.
Thanks so much for taking the time. I enjoyed this. I learned a lot reading the report and then just chatting with you today. And I hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.